Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for Three Women, Three Ways. We're the show that talks about women in the news, violence against women, discrimination against women, you name it. We're a women's program, and we're also for men. We get a lot of response from men, for which I am very pleased. Today, we're going to be tackling an issue that I find fascinating. Now, I'm on the West Coast, and I don't think we've had much publicity about this particular case. And I think that we should have on the West Coast. Right now, I have with me Rita Henley Jensen. She's the founder of Women's E-News, which, by the way, if you don't go to that, you really should. It's very, very informative, very interesting. She's a former senior writer for the National Law Journal, and she's a columnist for the New York Times Syndicate. And she has more than 30 years of experience in journalism and an armload of awards, including Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism Alumni Award, which is pretty prestigious. She is also a survivor of domestic violence and a former welfare mother who got her degrees from Ohio State University and Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. Rita's been with us before. She's extremely knowledgeable, and we are very happy to have you here again, Rita. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me back. I'm glad I didn't offend you before.
No.
I got invited back.
This is what it's all about, you know, discussion. Let's discuss these things. Learn what we can.
Yes.
And it's okay if we disagree on something. Right now I'm going to give out our phone number because I have a feeling people are going to want to jump in on this. 646-378-0430. Again, you can call in and join us. 646-378-0430. Now I'll tell you what this mysterious topic is about. Back when everybody was seeing publicity about the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, there was another case that was going on. And this case was with a 29-year-old at the time, black woman in Florida, same prosecutor or overseeing prosecutor as the George Zimmerman case. But this case had a very, very different outcome. In a nutshell, Marissa Alexander got a restraining order against her husband, and he came back. And so she had a legally registered handgun. She got her handgun, and she fired a warning shot into the ceiling. And she was arrested, and she was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Now, mind you, nobody was hurt, but she was sentenced to 20 years in prison for that act. And I find that appalling. How can that be, Rita?
You know, you got me. I think I read a little bit more, and one of her defenses, she had two defenses. One, the Florida, and this, again, this is in the same jurisdiction as the Trayvon Martin case. One, the stand your ground law. And the second defense was self-defense. I mean, she thought the man was going to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, with more good judgment than I would have in this situation, she got the gun and shot it into the air. First of all, who called? Yeah. And
you know, like,
who? All right.
You don't want to
so
come
then,
near me. Yeah, don't come near me. I could protect myself. Yeah.
Right. So it's a little sketchy what happened afterwards, but there's all this discretion throughout the whole process. One, the cops, when they came, why did they arrest her for shooting a warning shot? And why wasn't the husband arrested? We don't know that. Violation order.
The guy who violated his protection order, yeah.
Yeah. Wait a minute. How did that happen, right?
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
How did this even, what were you people thinking? Right? And then the discretion, so then the cops turn it over to the prosecutor. And, you know, a prosecutor has discretion about which cases to bring or not bring.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, a prosecutor decided that this was appropriate to charge her with felonies.
What? And again, the overseeing prosecutor, now not the one that showed up in court, but the overseeing prosecutor, same one that was reviewing the Trayvon Martin case and the George Zimmerman case, and, you know, same woman. And she, I read a quote from her that she absolutely thinks this is a legitimate and good prosecution, that she thinks that this is correct, the action that was taken was correct, and she feels good about it.
Well, what can I say? that just, you know, takes your breath away. I mean, they're different situations, right?
Yep.
She knew who her assailant was. But if this prosecutor looked up who, typically, do black women, and in fact, all women need to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Not strangers, but the people we have close relationships, particularly with men, we have close relationships. That's who is really responsible for much of the violent deaths of women in general across the world, in the United States, in Florida, and women of color in particular. So what, this woman had every reasonable ground to be terrified. Not only that, the man had assaulted her before.
Yeah, and he actually admitted he had five women, who he had children with five different women. And
well, that's not
that
a crime,
but it's not a character reference either. He admitted that he had abused each of the five women. He admitted it.
I mean, what's your next question? I mean, what?
Yeah, exactly. So he admitted that he was an abuser. There was no dispute that he was there in her home. And it was just, it was amazing. Now, in all fairness, I did some research that indicated that there are some questions, okay, on which they chose to prosecute. One is, she said that she was afraid of him, and yet she went out to her to the garage to get her gun out of her car and then returned to the kitchen. Instead of just leaving.
Well,
and prosecutors
saw
that as a key thing.
Oh, well, yeah. We had a similar case in New York where a woman by the name of Barbara was married to a police officer, and he had abused her, you know, terribly during 25 years of marriage. And one morning she became convinced that this was it. He had threatened to kill her. And those who study domestic violence say that it grows in severity, and that many battered women know that this is the moment. He's been threatening to kill me for however long, but something has changed and it's become more extreme. So he's shaving and he has his gun by the bathroom mirror, and she goes upstairs and gets the other gun. His other gun and comes downstairs and shoots him.
Well,
now,
and I'll just say that
advocates for women's rights have argued persuasively that she had a reasonable fear of her life.
Yeah. And I in that situation, I would fear for my life.
Yeah.
You know, he knew he was violating a protection order. He knew that he wasn't supposed to be there. And yet there he is. So it seems clear to me that by that act alone, he's not up to any, he's not there to check and see if she has everything she needs. He's there with something bad in mind, right?
And
now the
if she didn't demonstrate her seriousness, hello, I have a gun, go away.
Yeah.
There's no
now,
telling what would have happened.
Yeah, exactly. And let me see, I'm trying to go through some of these arguments that they had. You know, I'm trying to bring up both sides here.
I know, I respect you for that.
and that's a hard thing to do, Rita.
I know.
Okay, now here they say that the prosecution said that she The husband came, accused her of infidelity, questioned whether he was the father of the child she'd given birth to just a week earlier. So she's still in postpartum, you know.
Yeah.
And so she told him to leave. And then she locked herself in the bathroom.
Yes.
He broke through the door, grabbed her by the neck, and shoved her to the floor.
Yes.
Now she ran to the garage. Garage door wouldn't open. So she got a gun from the glove compartment, went back into the house, and when Gray saw her, that's her husband, she said he charged saying he was going to kill her. And that's when she fired the gun. And it saved her life. I mean, he didn't kill her, did he? But then the prosecutors come in. And, you know.
Exactly. What's the argument in that situation?
Yeah.
That as the mother of the week-old child provoked the husband to violate his order of protection, or he was entitled to violate his order of protection because he was over there to see the baby? I mean, come on. What was there?
I know. And then, clearly if he grabbed her by the neck, she must have some evidence of that. I mean, even if there's not a visible bruise, they can use ultraviolet light and see, you know, where the handprints are and all that kind of stuff. Now, the assistant state attorney general said that, this case arouses passions in people, but the facts show that Marissa Alexander engaged in criminal behavior. Okay? Two judges and six jurors found that this was not a stand-your-ground case.
Right.
Okay? And he, of course, tries to deflect, you know, the whole thing and saying that the husband, Mr. Gray, had two of his children with him when she fired the gun. Well, those children being present didn't stop him from, you know, coming after her. But the prosecutor's trying to, or the assistant state attorney is trying to deflect and says, whatever you think of this situation, the true victims of this incident are Gray's two children.
Wait a minute, three. There was the one-week-old baby, right?
That's right. That's it.
So they can't even count, apparently.
Well, I guess they figure the one-week-old doesn't count. You know, it hasn't started living yet. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. It seems like a pretty scary incident, whatever age you are. Well, but and he didn't count. He didn't count the women and the years of abuse. I mean.
Yep. No, that just, he glosses right over that.
And by the way, I just tossed this in. Across the United States, and there may be exceptions, but in nearly every jurisdiction, and maybe every jurisdiction, the leading cause of death of pregnant women, not related to their pregnancy, but just accidents and things, is homicide. We don't know what happened during the pregnancy, but there must have been a lot because she got an order of protection.
Yeah, she did. And now here's
where things... I'm just going to add that pregnant women have reason to be apprehensive.
Yeah, just from the fact that they're pregnant. Plus, you throw in the statistics about most women being who are killed by somebody they know. I mean, this is not a stranger. So she's living in a lot of risk factors there.
Yes, and women are at most risk to be murdered shortly after they separate from the ex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so let's just say she had every reasonable, and apparently the people down there can't count, but, but we're up to three. Three extremely, if she, you know, knew this, but I think people know this intuitively, whether they studied domestic violence or not, they know. That right after you leave, you're at risk, and if you're a woman of color, you're at risk, and if you are pregnant, or you're at risk.
Well, if they don't know, as you said, they should know, because those are some blatant statistics.
Well, the law enforcement certainly should know.
Well,
the prosecutor's office,
but now, okay, here I go with the devil's advocate again, because she was originally released on bail. This incident took place in August of 2010.
Right.
She was released on bail until her trial, but that was revoked in February of 2011 after she went to see Gray, even though she'd been ordered by a judge to stay away from him, and she was arrested for battery. which means, you know,
she smacked him.
Well, they don't elaborate what that is. Okay, what the battery is.
Well, let's say she smacked him.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And,
she might have been seeking child support.
Yeah, it could be. But nevertheless, she did have an order to stay away from him. She violated that order. So then that's when she went to prison. Okay? And so she's been spending this time in prison. And then just this last September, on the 26th of September, she was... I guess I'm missing something. She was given her guilty charge. She went to trial.
Right.
The jury was given instructions that have been challenged, and it took them 12 minutes for the jury to come back with a guilty finding.
Yeah.
So then in September of this year, she was granted a new trial.
Right.
Because of faulty jury instructions from the judge.
Yeah.
So she's still in jail, to the best of my knowledge. She hasn't had the retrial. I mean, that's going to be down the road somewhere. So she's still resting in jail. Well, her baby is now 3 years old. And, that alone makes me cringe, you know, that she's missed, you know, these 3 years, that the baby has missed 3 years of his mom.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether she's a good mother or not. I just don't know, you know.
But you don't get it. You don't go to jail for not being an ideal mother. I mean,
exactly.
She may, in fact, we know that the actual mother is, by and large, the best mother.
Yeah.
With rare exceptions, right? We know that.
Yeah.
And we also know that... anyway, this is all so disturbing because it's such an injustice. I mean, it's clearly because across the United States and certainly in Florida, men violate their orders of protection as her assailant was doing that very day. And they don't get thrown in jail. They're like, oh, don't do that.
Some on rare occasions they do.
Yeah.
But not very likely. That will happen.
Right.
So, you know, it's just so, you know, I mean, sexism is rampant here. There's also been the issue of racism. You know, if she was a white woman in a suburb, you know, would she have been given the same treatment? And, of course, all the prosecutors are saying, of course she would have.
And was she able to pay this lawyer?
Well, I don't know. I actually have a copy of a letter from her lawyer. Did you see that when you were doing your research?
No, I didn't.
I got to shuffle through papers for this. This is really good radio when you can hear paper shuffling. we know how to do it upright, don't we? Okay. Paper. Yeah, here we go. Her lawyer is Bruce Zimmet, and he's in Fort Lauderdale, and he released a letter, or I guess it's a news release, after September 26th when her retrial was granted, and he says they issued an opinion, the court, reversing Marissa Alexander's aggravated assault conviction and ordering that she be given a new trial. The appellate court determined that fundamental error was created in Marissa's trial when Marissa's jury received erroneous instructions, shifting the burden of proof on self-defense to Marissa. So in other words, you know, she had, and that this is not the way our legal system works. You're innocent until proven guilty. And basically what the jury instructions did was say, no, she's guilty unless she can prove she's not. Marissa was informed of the reversal of her convictions early this afternoon. She expressed gratitude for today's decision, as well as her continued confidence in the judicial system's ability to correct mistakes. Yeah, I bet she did. Marissa also wanted to thank those who have offered their support, and she expressed her desire to be back with her children and her family. Her case will be returned to the circuit court in Jacksonville. Judge James H. Daniel will set a date for her retrial, and her lead appellate attorneys, Faith Gay and Bruce Zimmet, will also lead the defense in her new trial.
Yeah,
and
I think this
contact
is... Yeah.
So he issued a press release saying that, you know, she's going to get a new trial based on inaccurate jury instructions or faulty jury instructions, and hasn't been set yet.
Exactly. Well, my guess is what's happened is that at her trial, and I don't know, I would have to go back, but often this happens that if you're not a wealthy person, your lawyers don't have the time or the resources to do a good job to defend you.
Oh, yeah.
And
God bless those few lawyers who do pro bono work and who do it based on, you know, because I'll tell you, I have a share of experience with attorneys, and you run out of money and they drop you like a hot potato.
Yes. So,
you know,
these appellate lawyers try to fix what's broke. But they're so crucial. I mean, it just demonstrates that obviously they can't appeal and say this is an injustice, right? They have to come up with grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so the common sense would say, excuse me, this is an injustice. She didn't hurt anybody. And, you know, the man was lunging at her. But so we don't know what happened on the trial level, but on the appellate level, they were able to just appeal on, as they call it, procedural grounds.
Yes. Yeah.
And now she has a chance. And, you know,
those
procedural grounds are the only thing. You can't challenge the actual testimony. You can only challenge the procedures.
Yeah. Well, and my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, is that once that a jury trial is a jury trial, that's a done deal unless they can find, as you said, some sort of error in the procedures that were carried out.
Yes.
So that's what the appellate court
the
is
standard
all about.
And once, as you know, I used to be a reporter for the National Law Journal, and here's the standard of explained to me of adequate counsel. If your lawyer can blink once for yes and twice for no, he's good enough. That was a lawyer who told me that joke. And within the profession, there's a lot of discussion about whether people, you know, charged with serious crimes, probably no one in the system could figure out why this was going forward, right? Because everybody, it was a licensed gun. She shot in the air, and the guy was lunging at her.
But one of the reports I read said she would have gotten a lesser sentence if she'd killed him.
Well, who knows, right? I mean, God, that just takes my breath away. You know, I would hope that was not true, and we'll never know. But again, it's like, how is the... What's her legal representation and how is she judged? And as we were saying earlier, she was judged as an evil woman.
Yeah.
And chivalry did not come into play. And people argued that if she'd been white and middle class, chivalry would have come into play. But also resources would have come into play. Right?
Yeah.
So how do you sort all that out?
Yeah, and, you know, like she thanked, in the press release anyway, she thanked her supporters. She's got a crowdfunding appeal going on for help with her new trial. And I looked at it, and they had raised $2,700 right now, which is not a heck of a lot of money.
Doesn't even pay for the transcript. She has to purchase the transcript so that she can appeal.
Yeah. And in all fairness, you know, most lawyers can't afford to put the time and effort into something like this for no money. You know, I mean, we all try to support our families. We all, you know, I can't think of anybody who works consistently for free.
Nope.
Just doesn't work. So, I think that, you know, she's still got a long road to hoe ahead of her. I really do believe that. And hopefully this new trial will go better for her. But
her crowdfunding will pick up. How do we find the crowdfunding site?
Well, actually, I can look that up while we're talking, if we want to give that out. I want to toss out our phone number again. It's 646- 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. Now, we talked about the sexism in this sentence.
Right.
How about the racism? Now, I read also in some of my research, I read one person who said that, you know, if she had been white, she'd never be in jail right now. And that this is just the opposite side of what George Zimmerman got for killing a young black man. That he was, you know, I this is not necessarily my opinion, this is what I've read, that he was let go because he was a white man, although my understanding is that he's actually an Hispanic man. And that you know, the whole racism thing against women, or, you know, the whole racism, I can't do two things at once. I'll look up that article later.
The website also, Donate to Marissa. Well, yes, and so it's the double whammy. I think that that's one of the things that women of color struggle with all the time. Are you being discriminated against because you're black or because you're female? And in reality, they're both. And they're both 24/7. They're not like some days a woman and some days a person of color. And it's different. So
yeah,
as we were saying, that women within the criminal justice system are often treated differently based on race. And those who are women of color are treated as the evil women, and the book is thrown at them, right? And
yeah. Didn't you have a study that compared conviction rates for blacks and whites?
I just looked up a paper that made that assumption and discussed it. I think there's a lot of statistical data, but not too much. On the reality and sorting it out by race and federal courts versus state courts, because these are state courts. And women may, in fact, the federal system may be more unfair or less unfair. We all know that the numbers of women going to jail are rising, even though criminality, quote unquote, within among women has not changed. So something has changed, but is that because chivalry is no longer expected or operational, or women of color more likely to be sentenced to prison, and as a result, they're experiencing similar to what men of color experience?
Yeah.
So it's very difficult, and I don't know of any academic who has tried to sort this all out.
It's
please phone in if you're listening.
Yeah.
Help us.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. Tell us. You know, I spoke to so many people involved in this case, you know, in preparing for the show, and it's amazing to me how many people really are rooting for her. You know, they're out there, they're really trying to get her free. I don't think, again, being on the West Coast, I don't think I have seen a single article about this in any of the West Coast papers, you know. I mean, or blog sites or website pages.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen it. Now, you're on the East Coast. Is that, but you're north. Have you seen publicity about the situation?
Just a little tiny bit. Not very much. And it certainly deserves the same outrage as the Zimmerman created, right? The Zimmerman shooting of Trayvon Martin. And you got to wonder, that fits a trope, right, as expression of media, in that it's a story that everybody understands, right? A white man kills a black man. That's been going on for a long, long time, and there's an injustice there. So we all understand that, but there's not this widespread understanding that women of color are at risk, and if they take action, you know, at their own peril.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's like it just doesn't, it's just like, well, we don't know what that story is, or the public isn't properly alarmed about injustices against women of color in the criminal justice system. I mean, got me. But there's a lot of news editors. There's a lot of news editors. You know, the AP wire is the AP wire. They all get it. So there's a lot of news wire editors or newspaper editors, radio editors, blogs that aren't, don't think it's newsworthy, and that's tragic.
Yeah, I think so too. But there again, you know, what news is considered important, you know?
Yes.
And as a culture, I feel that we, I always say we do not let the pendulum swing in our culture. We go straight from one side of an issue to way over to the other side in our reactions. And there's no in-between. There's no, you know, sorting out stuff.
Middle ground.
Middle ground stuff. We just don't even think about that stuff. We pick a case and we pick an issue and we work that to the ground and everybody jumps on board, and then the rest of the cases are kind of like, oh, well, I'm busy.
and I am busy.
Yeah.
But still.
Exactly. And I wanted to get back to the state attorney, because when I was doing my research, she kind of ticked me off. Did you read anything about this? State attorney Angela Corey, who tried George Zimmerman and Alexander's cases, argued that Marissa's case did not fall under the state's stand your ground law. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's what got George Zimmerman off, is they have that stand your ground law, where if you feel like you're threatened, you're free to open fire.
Right.
And she said that this case didn't cover that. That was their first approach with this case, was to try to use the stand your ground law to get it dismissed.
Right.
But this state attorney, Angela Corey, said, no, this case, Marissa's case, doesn't fall under stand your ground. And they they had protests outside the courthouse, and, you know, based on this. To me, this is the meat of this story. I mean, once you get past the sexism and the racism, you're left with a story of domestic violence and a woman trying to protect herself from domestic violence. Now, maybe she wasn't completely innocent and just a little standby person. Maybe she, you know, whatever she did, it doesn't justify domestic violence. And this guy had a record of abusing not just her but other women as well. He was, he admitted abusing all five of the mothers of his children. Five, not just one, not just two, but five, and he admitted it. And what does this tell domestic violence survivors? She was trying to protect herself. She was trying to chase him away. And basically, she just got slapped down and said, no, you can't protect yourself in this way. You know, other people can use stand your ground, but not you.
But not you.
Whenever
I think about this case, I think about when I was being battered. And I did not have a gun permit, and I never thought of using a gun to warn him away, and it probably would have worked. But I did have fantasies about murdering this guy, right, so that I would be safe and my children would be safe. And I had a whole plan because I thought, well, who would blame me? Right?
Yeah.
And it turns out almost everybody.
Now, see,
I just assumed, I was young, I assumed that people would disapprove of a man beating his wife and his children, and I had no idea it wasn't necessarily so.
Yeah, exactly. Those are his children and his wife, okay?
Yeah, and I'm sort of glad I didn't kill him, because it wouldn't have been on my conscience, and it would have been awful it would have hurt me.
Now, I never dreamed of actually pulling the trigger on him, but I did pray for Mack trucks on occasion.
So we all have these fantasies, and so what I mean is that she had the good judgment not to point at him, but to shoot in the air.
Yep.
God knows
yep.
what would have happened if she had pointed at him.
Yeah.
Even
oh,
wounded
great.
Him.
Well,
great.
Like I said, I did run across that one article, and it said that she would have gotten a lesser sentence for manslaughter.
Not murder, but she probably would have been prosecuted for murder.
Yeah, but doesn't murder have to have some sort of plan involved?
Not necessarily. You know, as we've just learned and focused on the last half hour, that the standards are pretty flexible.
Yeah.
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 And
we'll
you, well, the woman in New York who I talked about, I mean, she was accused of planning the murder because she went upstairs to get the gun.
Well, I guess that would have been the case with this because she went out to the garage to get the gun. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She planned to use the gun and then did. So, there's no guarantee that she would have been charged with manslaughter.
Yeah. Well, there's an organization in the Florida area. I actually spoke with several of these representatives from Sisterhood of Survivors, and you can find them online.
SOS, probably.
Yeah. Sisterhood of Survivors, and a representative from their organization said the justice system is not working. The message we're getting is that if you are a victim of domestic violence, you should just let the man beat and kill you.
That's very disappointing. I think it's an accurate assessment of the message, but I don't think any citizen of the United States should ever get that message, and in fact, no one on the planet. And it's almost like when she said that, it's almost like has anybody heard of the United Nations and their initiatives to reduce violence against women across the globe, and particularly in India, which we know has gotten a lot of headlines lately. But oh my God. I mean, I thought we were all on the same page, all the way from the United Nations down to the local police department. We all sort of agreed, and I feel like I'm quoting Gail Collins, the columnist for the New York Times. You know, I thought, we're all together on this one, aren't we? Aren't we all together on this one? That
well, apparently, some people
apparently
haven't
not.
Gotten that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just astounding, just astounding to me. I'm reading here. I read that one about the prosecutor. I think that the message for women who are in domestic violence situations is pretty grim. You know?
Yeah.
And I know that different parts of the country and different parts of the world view things differently. Maybe if she'd been in a different county or a different state, the outcome would have been totally different. But the fact is...
Well, that's the hell of it, right?
Yeah.
Is that you could believe. If she got a different judge, if there was a different prosecutor. And I think every citizen would prefer to believe that fair is fair and justice is justice and the law is the law. And it shouldn't be so unpredictable.
It just, to me, you know, look at all the lives this has ruined, you know. And the kicker in this whole thing is that Ben beat her and he was never charged with a crime.
I know.
Never charged with a crime.
Right. That's assault and battery. She was accused of battery.
Yeah. Now, it seems to me that if they're going to be that aggressive about a warning shot, shouldn't they be aggressive about people who actually lay hands on the other person? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm very naive here, but to me, now, again, in fairness, I'll play devil's advocate. The prosecutor said that she actually, the bullet hit the wall above the children, bounced off the wall, which is hard for me to understand, and went into the ceiling and lodged into the ceiling.
Okay.
I mean, that must have been a pretty solid wall to deflect a bullet. I can't imagine, you know, plasterboard doing that, but that's what they said.
Okay.
So their contention was that she actually was shooting right at him or at the children, and it just deflected and bounced off into the ceiling, which... you know, to me, that defies logic, because if I was really going to shoot at him and the first one missed, I'd pull the trigger again and again and again.
I mean, yeah.
You know, I mean, I
yeah.
think that most people would. You know, I mean, you hear situations where somebody's being attacked and they keep firing the gun until it's empty, you know, just because they're scared.
Yeah.
So that, to me, defies logic. That sounds like a poor excuse to me. But
well,
then,
but she could hypothesize to the difference. I mean, it sounds like they get, well, that might have happened, right? She might have pointed it this way and it didn't work out. But they have no evidence of that. They're just like, excuse me?
Yeah. I know. And supposedly, you know, I mean, this, I've never heard, I watch all the shows, and I have never heard of a bullet being deflected by drywall. I mean, I just,
it meant a metal stud in the wall or something, but whatever, nobody was hurt. She filed a warning shot, and apparently it warned the guy, right? Because he didn't stay around. Maybe he called 911. But
he did. He actually called 911 and said he was being attacked.
Oh, that's right.
that his wife was trying to kill him.
He set the narrative, right?
Yep.
He was really cagey. So they're rushing him with, the woman has a gun and she's trying to kill me. And so he set the narrative, which was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fairly typical for abusers, right?
Yeah.
That
they're always
one. Tend to be sociopaths. And people tend to believe them, right? So
yeah.
they tend to be victims. Why are you scared to kill me? And they tend to be believed.
You know, I had a
they're usually
professional
very charming.
Associate one who found out that I was doing work with domestic violence issues, and he looked at me and he said, well, I've never told anybody this, but I was abused by my ex-wife. And
yeah,
I said, well, you know, that could be. My father was abused by my mother, so I know it can happen. However, the likelihood of it happening, pretty slim.
Yeah.
And it's usually retaliatory if it is. But what I said to this associate was, you know, the first thing I think of when I hear a man say that is that he is a perpetrator.
Yeah.
And that may not be very kind of me. It may be very judgmental of me. But the fact is, most of the men I have talked to, the overwhelming majority of men I've talked to who've claimed to be victims, have in fact been the victimizers. So
I think it's this sort of this self-pity thing that that is sort of the red flag. It's like, I've been a victim too,
flag.
You know. And and I think it's a different tone of voice and a different method of delivering the information that we hear when women confess and then compared to when men claim. And so, I mean, and this guy may have been totally accurate.
Yep. Could have been.
Are there crazy women? Oh, yeah. Are there violent women? Yes.
I think I've ruined a couple of them. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know, like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
but nevertheless, I like to say the data doesn't support that. Just
very
like,
good.
You know, yeah, the data doesn't support that. So, I'm very sorry that you had an unhappy experience, and it sounds like, you know, it's terrible, but you realize it's very unusual.
Yeah.
And, you know, I encourage you to build a men's shelter. right?
Well, that's a whole other show, you know,
the
men's shelters issue. You had asked earlier about how people could support Marissa, and...
Yes.
There is a friend of hers who has organized a group called INCITE, INCITE, Women of Color Against Violence. Okay? And there's also the Committee to Free Marissa Alexander. So if you Google those things, you'll come right up to information about how you can contribute, how you can find out more. Yeah, how you can be helpful. And, it's... my hope that when we do shows like this, it helps other people realize how prevalent these kinds of situations are, not just in your state, not just in other states, not just, you know, in a different part of the world, but, you know, here in the United States, and, you know, and it's affecting women everywhere.
And you never know, right?
Yeah.
How vulnerable you are, because if a different set of police officers had come, maybe they would have said, you know, come on, buddy, right? She shot in the ceiling, and we have an order of protection. You shouldn't even be here in the first place.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or,
you know, and the fact
or whatever.
Even...
And so it's all this discretionary stuff and bias, whether it's gender bias, race bias, gender and race bias, comes into play right at that moment, and it set the stage. And everybody went, you know, went down the same road. I'm mixing my metaphors. So the guy drew the map, right, when he called us, my wife is trying to kill me, and everybody followed the guidelines that he set down.
Yeah. That's the story,
and that's the story. Oh, she was trying to kill him. No,
yeah.
Apparently not.
Yeah. And we do believe, you know, PR. I mean, who was it that somebody much more famous than I who said, you know, a lie becomes a truth if it's repeated enough?
Exactly.
And so, you know, if you want to counteract some information with information of your own, whether it's true or whatever, you can just, you know, start web pages, you can start a media campaign, you can just, and if you get enough coverage for that, pretty soon people will believe it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm not saying he was lying. He may have had a reason to believe that she was going to kill him because she was shooting a gun. So he had a reason to be afraid, but nevertheless.
And it wasn't like he'd been a nice little pussycat with her his whole life. You know,
she had reason, right? She had cause.
Exactly.
But it doesn't work for me, right?
Yeah.
And then, again, you know, many an abuser is a sociopath and believed immediately. And with the bias of the police officers coming in and you see a woman with a gun, he says, well, she's trying to kill me. You know, it seems credible until you, you know, look up the order of protection.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to me, it's like, who did she hurt compared to who did he hurt? And yes, she had a weapon. But that brings us to the other issue in this case, which is mandatory sentencing.
Yes.
Because she was found guilty of aggravated assault, that comes with a mandatory sentence in the state of Florida.
Yes.
So apparently her judge did not have discretion. Her judge couldn't look at this and say, well, yeah, she was guilty of aggravated assault, but it was there were circumstances. So we'll give her a year in jail, or we'll give her even 5 years in jail.
And,
you know,
why should she go to jail anyway? And that's when prosecutorial discretion comes to the prosecutor decides what to charge, and they know exactly what the outcome is, right? If they have mandatory sentencing, they know, and that's why it's really the discretion is no longer in the judge's hands, but it's in the prosecutor's hands. And without mandatory sentencing, you have a judge who can make a decision that counterbalances or at least explores the prosecutor's position. But as it is now, the prosecutor has total control. And the prosecutor could have charged her with reckless disregard or, you know, whatever it is, making too loud of a noise. They could have, if they wanted to charge her.
Yeah. Well, and we did a story about a woman who'd been charged before with a different situation, and I was looking up the mandatory sentencing because that state did have mandatory sentencing, but they had ranges, mandatory ranges for sentencing,
right,
which makes a lot more sense to me than just saying, okay, this one gets 20 years, that one gets 10 years, you know. They had ranges for judges.
Well, you know, I'm just going to make a smart remark. And sorry, I hope the people of Florida forgive me. But they can't count down there. At least the people in law enforcement. All right, that's not true. That's not true. But you got to wonder, you know, you got to wonder what were they thinking that, I mean, I think in whatever religious organization you belong to, there's forgiveness. There's some people do this, and then other people do something that's much worse, like Madoff. Not only did Bernie Madoff steal, right, but he stole from all of his friends. Isn't that worse than stealing less money and not, you know, from strangers? I don't know, but the people have to make decisions.
Yeah.
It's not black and white, and I guess we would all wish for a black and white world. It's not. We all know that it isn't.
But it does seem to me that if there had been some discretion, you know, a range from which this judge could have picked for a sentence. Okay, maybe he doesn't get total discretion. Maybe he's told, okay, for this, this crime, you can, you know, go between 5 years and 6 years, or 5 years and 10 years, or 10 years and 20 years. There's just no, I mean, it's like, okay, fill out Section A and you get Section B, period, the end. And that just, I mean, why do we even have judges if we're going to, you
right,
know, once
the prosecutor,
guilty,
yeah, right.
Yeah, then we can just,
I mean, they
them
did
off
go to law school, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? In most cases, not in every case.
Yeah. That's true. That is actually true.
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't know if this has changed or not, but several years ago, I was talking to a friend, and we found out that in this state, well, state of Washington, you didn't have to have a law degree to take the bar exam. And if you passed the bar exam, you got all your license, your law license.
And,
so,
and that's, by the way, that's an area that's expanding because there's not enough lawyers for the for people who need legal services. So,
are you kidding me?
I'm not. You'll find it was in the news that the American Bar Association has recommended that there's different ways of becoming a lawyer other than spending 3 years in school and whatever, $100,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, in theory, I like that idea, but not enough lawyers. I mean, really? There's not enough lawyers out there? Maybe there's not enough lawyers.
Not enough lawyers to defend black women who are accused of a crime.
Yeah, maybe that's...
There may be enough corporate lawyers.
Okay. Because I remember reading a lot about that, and there was a whole cartload of lawyers who are working in a variety of situations where they probably never pictured themselves, like in storefronts and, you know, things like that.
I just want to pitch our website, if you don't mind.
Please do.
So, go to our website or just type in Women Z News in Google, and Women in Prison is a key phrase. We've written some really fantastic pieces that really examine, like every story, we haven't done enough, but really examine the issues of how women in prison are treated and their experiences. And we just did a large series on transgenders in the immigration system, right? They're being held for deportation, and they're really at risk, you know, for all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, I read Women's E! News regularly, as you know, because it gives me more of a world view on what's happening with women out there in the world. And even though I believe that we could stand a heck of a lot of improvement here in the Western Hemisphere compared to some nations, we're doing fine, which doesn't mean we need to sit on our haunches, but it does mean that we can keep things in perspective and not pretend that it's not happening everywhere, as you mentioned, particularly India. So I suspect that if you were in India and you were Marissa Alexander, you probably wouldn't even be around anymore. So I don't know. Anyway, Women's E-News is a tremendous resource. I recommend it highly if you have any interest whatsoever in women's issues, because it is a tremendous resource. So
thank you.
Now, the final thing that I wanted to talk about, because we are running out of time here,
yes,
is what about this woman's husband? How could they justify not bringing any charges against this man?
What can I say?
I mean, how? I mean,
you know, it just takes your breath away.
Yeah. I mean, it's like nothing. He violated a protection order. That alone should get him some charges.
Yes.
You know, I mean, not 20 years in jail, but some charges. And nothing. Absolutely nothing for this guy. So, like the other article that I was referring to earlier, what does this teach us? This teaches domestic violence victims that they have to be darn careful about how they try to protect themselves, and it teaches abusers that, hey, you know, not so bad. I have, you know, pretty much free rein here to do what I would like.
You? I think that worldwide the expression is impunity, which is, you know, laws don't apply to you. And Heather, I'm calling you on my other phone because this one is acting up, so here I come. So,
okay.
But just talk for a minute about impunity.
Okay. So, yeah, and impunity basically means, you know, the rules don't apply to me. You know, I mean, we all know somebody for whom that philosophy works. And unfortunately, a lot of people who believe in that are not just free spirits. They're people who are abusing the system. So are you back? Nope, not back yet. Are you back, Rita? No? Okay. There you are, Rita.
Yes, here I am.
Yeah, there we are. I was just saying that we all know one of these people that believes that the rules do not apply to them. And sometimes they're just freewheeling, you know, kids at heart, blah, blah, blah. But most of the time, or a lot of the time, they are people who really don't have good intentions and fun times in mind when they violate the rules. They just really don't think that they have to abide by things that everyone else has to abide by.
And
are you there,
Rita? I think that that's fairly typical of abusers.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
And the system confirms that for them, that they can live with impunity, that they can hurt 5 different families, and there are no consequences. It's really scary. It's like, oh, my God, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This erroneous belief that the rules don't apply to you actually is true. You're not crazy?
Well, and we've just seen that, haven't we? You know,
yeah.
We've just seen an abuser, an admitted abuser, who got nothing, not even a slap on the wrist. You know, I just it befuddles me as much as, you know, the whole situation with Marissa. It just befuddles me. Well, I had a difficult time finding a quote for this segment. They just don't have a lot of quotes about women who are in jail unjustly, I've discovered. So what I thought I would read is just a general quote from Eldridge Cleaver. In prison, those things withhold and denied to the prisoner become precisely what he wants most of all. So I think that we can safely assume that what Marissa wants most of all is to get out of there and see her children. I can't imagine giving birth to a baby and then, you know, before that baby's even a year old, being taken away and not being allowed to see
not
your
even,
baby and raise your baby.
Not even a month old, right?
No, no.
Oh.
So anyway, again, join us next week. We'll tackle another topic about women's issues. And Rita, always a pleasure to have you here. Again, check out Women's E-News.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And Rita is just a wealth of information. Women's E-News, go to it. Check us out next week. Remember, you can check out all of our shows on an archive at blogtalkradio.com. 3 women, 3 ways. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.